Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for tuning in. Always great to have you listening to the broadcast. Connecting Faith is a program daily here on Faith Radio where we look at finding ways we can apply biblical principles to daily life situations. And today we're going to talk about a relationship that has gone wrong, and there's sadly too much of it, and we're going to talk about maybe restoration after. But Ted, looking forward to getting to today's guests, some friends of ours from way back.
So. Yeah, a lot of radio listeners will recognize their voices, I'm sure. This topic, boy, I tell you what, my wife is a marriage and family therapist I've talked about before, and she sees this, sadly, as you say, often in her practice, but she also sees some amazing reconciliation take place.
We're hoping that today's broadcast will be helpful in that way, and we'll have a frank discussion because the book that we're referencing is called Surviving an Affair. It is a revised edition from our guest today, Dr. Willard F. Harley, and he wrote it with his daughter, Dr. Jennifer Harley Chalmers. And Bill and Joyce are in studio today. We've had them with us before. Bill's a nationally acclaimed clinical psychologist, marriage counselor, the best-selling author of a number of books, including His Needs, Her Needs, Five Steps to Romantic Love, Love Busters, Draw Close. I think we had him on last time. We were talking about He Wins, She Wins. And he and Joyce do a daily radio show called Marriage Builders Radio. And they live in the Twin Cities area. And we're happy to have you guys back. Welcome.
So. We're glad to be back.
And Joyce, nice to have you with us here. We're going to turn on the microphone this time.
Okay, great. You know, last time I almost didn't come back you never turned my mic on.
I know. It's a contingent agreement here, so we'll see how it goes.
I was nice to you before, so it worked,
okay,
yes.
All right. Bill, it's good to see you again. This topic of surviving an affair, I mean, it's sadly, probably what you end up over your years of counseling is spend a lot of time dealing with, isn't it? So.
Yeah, and it all started when I was actually in my early 20s, and the pastor of our church came to me, 21 years old, wanting some help because his wife was having an affair with a choir director. And I spent the entire night with he and his wife. And couldn't get anywhere with either one of them. And they ended up getting divorced. It was a tragedy for the pastor, of course, and for our church. And he never did go back into the ministry. And his wife married the fellow, married the choir director. And then the choir director had another affair. And they got divorced. And it was just an incredible tragedy for everybody in sight. And so I began to think there ought to be a way of dealing with this. I can't think of a way, but there ought to be a way. And, of course, as I became, I got my Ph.D. in psychology and I got into clinical practice, more and more of my time was spent figuring out how to solve that kind of a problem and others in marriage.
Okay. The sad part of that, too, Neil, is that the choir director and the pastor's wife found scripture they felt that supported their affair. And we talk about people who are in affairs. They're in the fog. I mean, obviously, that's the case. Because we who are clear-minded folks totally know that this is not of God and this is not approved by God.
It's an area where many have friends, maybe even family, or maybe you experienced it. And if you'd like to join the conversation today, you're welcome to do that. And if you'd like to remain anonymous, you're welcome to do that as well. We'll open up the phone lines here right away to invite you into the conversation. It's 877-933-2484. It's 877-933-2484. Or if you'd prefer to send an email, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com. And click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link right there, and you can send us a note. We'll talk a bit about why affairs begin and end, how to end them, how to restore the marriage, and how to rebuild trust. Those are some of the key issues. Bill, I was curious. I've just been reading recently 2 Samuel. You know, it's the spring, the time when the kings go off to war, and so David sends the guys out, but he stays back, and, you know, one evening, you know the story, he gets up from his bed, he walks around the roof of the palace, and he sees a woman bathing, and on it goes. And I'm wondering, it just made me wonder, are guys, or I mean, is Is spring a time when affairs start more often, or is that just
They tend to, for a variety of reasons. First of all, the summer itself is a time where romance is something that thrives. We tend to be more in love when it's warm. Now, you kind of wonder, maybe here in Minnesota, why so many people go south for the winter. Basically,
but that's why we put fires in the fireplace.
Right. But the basic idea is that as a marriage counselor, I have the hardest time with marriages during the winter. We're flooded with people telling us that their marriage is falling apart, they're getting a divorce. And then during the summer, things sort of pick up. So in an affair, if it gets started in the spring, it actually has a lot of life to it through the summer and fall. And for that reason, it's probably a very dangerous time to be developing a romantic relationship with somebody of the opposite sex.
We'll talk about, maybe we should just do that in terms of definition. How do we define an affair, and is it an affair if sex is not part of the equation?
Yeah, it can be an affair if you are actually, let me talk about two different kinds of things. First of all, you can have a romantic relationship with somebody without it being sexual. By that, I mean that you're talking intimately with that person. You are you're engaged in your favorite recreational activities. You're being very affectionate. You're being very admiring. And in my nomenclature, you're making massive love bank deposits. And you reach the romantic love threshold, and you haven't had sex at all, and yet you're madly in love with this other person. That is clearly an affair. An affair is also any kind of a sexual relationship outside of marriage, which can be pornography. It can be chatting with somebody on Facebook. It can be some kind of a relationship with that's just for the purpose of sex, and we have a lot of that too. So you have sex outside of marriage is always an affair, but any romantic experiences outside of marriage is also an affair, even if it doesn't have to do with sex.
Are there seasons in a marriage where we're more vulnerable?
I would say that vulnerability is throughout marriage. I mean, we dealt with somebody on our radio show just yesterday that 11 months into the marriage, and already his wife has had an affair. And we also work with people that have been married for 50 years and are retired. And they have affairs. And it's an interesting thing that throughout married life, I don't think there is a point in time where the vulnerability ends. I think you're vulnerable throughout. And the people who are the most vulnerable are the people that don't think they're vulnerable.
And that's a good message to get out. It really is. Because the minute you think you are capable of rising above anything like this, it's like getting a cold. Bill and I come to you today giving you fist bumps because we both have colds. Yeah. But the idea is that we're all vulnerable to getting sick. And we are, folks, all vulnerable to finding someone else, that it, being able to deposit Love Unit Center Love Bank. We had a caller one time. The woman called in. She said, "Joyce, I'm a Christian. I love my husband, and I'm falling in love, however, with a man at work because he talks to me." So it's a case where she was just blindsided by that because she felt she loved her husband. Or maybe she just cared for him, didn't have romantic love, but she could have had romantic love. So even when things are together in your marriage, someone else can deposit love units, and you can find them being attractive to you. And that's why we always talk about the extraordinary precautions. To not let that happen.
Is that, before we, and we'll take a break in a moment, but and we'll get into diving in some more about ways that we can end an affair and restoring marriage and some of the step-by-step that goes along with that. We're talking about the book Surviving an Affair from Dr. Willard Harley and Jennifer Harley Chalmers co-written that, and we've got some copies of Bill's books available if you want to join us at 877-93-FAITH. I mentioned you talk about seasons. We're vulnerable anytime. Is it men or women tend to be more initiators?
I think most people think that it's men that do the initiating, but it's been my experience that it's pretty equal. And what we have is situations where, of course, if you think about it, a man and a woman define an affair. So the question is, are men more likely to have affairs than women? It has to be equal, you know. But the basic thought that I have about infidelity is that it never starts intentionally for most people. Most people do not go into what turns out to be an affair with the idea that I think I need an affair. It starts out as a friendship. Friendship with somebody of the opposite sex that gets very personal. And you're helping each other out, and you're there for each other when you need help, and you're able to talk to the person whenever they need help. Whenever they want to talk, you're ready to talk. And that kind of a friendship develops into a bonding of the two people where they had never wanted this to happen. But it all of a sudden their brain changes, and they start thinking that we've got to be with each other for the rest of our lives, the way you would feel when you before you married your wife. I mean, you know, this is the woman I want. This is the woman I want to spend the rest of my life. Well, you were in love, see, and when you're in love, you want this person with you for the rest of your life. When you're feeling that way towards somebody outside of marriage, it is extremely destructive, extremely harmful.
We'll get into more of it in the coming minutes and invite you to join the conversation. Again, we do have some of Bill's books, whether it's His Needs, Her Needs, or Five Steps to Romantic Love, or Love Busters, or Surviving an Affair. Let us know when you call, and we'll put you in the drawing for those at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. And, of course, we welcome you to join the conversation as well. As we talk about surviving an affair, we'll talk about issues about how we've talked about sort of how they began. We'll get into that a little bit more, but how to end it and how to restore relationships, all that ahead with Dr. Willard Harley, a clinical psychologist, marriage counselor, best-selling author, and his wife Joyce. They host the regular internet radio show on marriagebuilders.com called Marriage Builders Radio, and we'll invite Bill and Joyce into more conversation in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Maybe you and I were never meant to be complete. Could we just be broken together?
If you can bring the new song from Casting Crowns. Talking about the very issue about the building a strong relationship together as husband and wife. This is Connecting Faith, and we're talking today with Bill and Joyce Harley. Dr. Willard Harley is the nationally acclaimed clinical psychologist and best-selling author of a number of books, including His Needs, Her Needs, Five Steps to Romantic Love, Love Busters, He Wins, She Wins, talking about surviving an affair, one of the books that they've written. And he and Joyce have written a devotional book called Draw Close. And we actually will make some of the copies of those available as well. So when you call, make sure you sign up for that at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Bill, we were just talking a little bit before the break about, you know, people never expected that they would get into a situation like that. You suggest, I know, in the book Surviving an Affair, that affairs and addictions are linked. Is there a connection there?
Yeah, I'm sure that there is a physiological reason that people, once they start having an affair, become so irrational in their unwillingness to end it, and the ridiculous excuses that they will use, especially if they're Christians. And they feel that God has somehow chosen this other person for them, and that maybe they married the wrong person, and it wasn't God's will, and now God has given them a feeling of love. And so we hear this a lot among Christians that have affairs. And I think that it's important to recognize that when a person falls in love, when you're married, it works toward the development and sustenance of the family. Being in love with your spouse is the best thing you can do for your children. And it gives you all kinds of instincts that make your family much, much stronger. But when you're in love with somebody outside of the marriage, it does exactly the opposite. It makes you turn into a person who is destroying your family in everything that you do. And we've seen many people, I've witnessed many people who have told me that the affair that they had was the worst thing they've ever done in their entire life because it destroyed their family, that's why it was horrible. And so this is why we tell people, it's the worst experience people can have, so guard against it. Don't let yourself fall into that trap.
I had a woman in my Bible study, and we were sharing how God has worked in our lives. And she said, my husband had an affair, and we didn't know this story at all. First time we had heard this, and she said, I was on the brink of suicide. Now, I bring this up because to warn the folks that this is how it devastates the betrayed spouse, that not only are you out fulfilling your dream, but look what you're doing to your family. And it's amazing how people don't see it when they're in the midst of an affair. By the way, the end of that story was that, obviously, she didn't commit suicide. And she said she was in the midst of working it all out, and God said, if you kill yourself, the other woman will be raising your children, she said. And immediately she decided against the suicide. And of course, we were talking about how we see how God works in our life after the fact. And that was one of those situations. But devastation is just a mild word to the things that we've heard that have been applied to marriages where the person has been betrayed.
Is it reluctant to end an affair just simply because you can't, you don't want to come clean to talk about it, or you just, I mean, or is there just, I guess if you still have the romantic love feelings, then you just, you don't want to break it off, even
though
you know.
Yeah, the feeling of romance is, the feeling of romantic love is what keeps you there. We have several strategies that we have developed to help break up an affair. What we encourage the betrayed spouse to do if they want to continue their marriage is to draw the unfaithful spouse to them, which is hard to do. I mean, if your spouse is having an affair, it's hard to be really nice to that person. And yet, that's an essential part of the whole plan of recovery. In other words, you've got to be kind, and you've got to be patient, and you can't be judgmental toward the person, even though there's plenty to judge. And then at the same time, you want to drive the other person away. You want to drive the person that they're having the affair with away. So you expose it. You let everybody know that my spouse is having an affair, and I need your support. I need your prayers.
And that's
I need your
the
help.
Reason for encouragement, because you do need support during that time.
Right, and you tell the spouse of the person that is having the affair with your husband or wife up all about it, and their family, and their parents, and their employer. You know, and what you want to do is make the affair something that is just simply not practical.
Often infidelity thrives on the secrecy and the fantasy. And once the fantasy is removed, then all of a sudden it isn't maybe as appealing to the person who is involved in the affair.
Now, the person, the betrayed spouse will then say to me, yeah, but isn't going to make my husband and my wife angry with me? I said, with certainty, your spouse will be very angry with you. And, well, isn't that going to drive my spouse away? I said, well, that's the one thing that you have to be able to do, is to expose it. And to some extent, your spouse will be angry. Your spouse will say, this is it, I'm over it. But in so doing, you speed up the demise of the affair itself. And so it's a risk worth taking. At the same time you're exposing, you want to say, I care about you, I want you to be a part of my life. Whatever problems we may have had during our marriage, I want to overcome them. I want to be a better spouse for you. And you do that in concert with telling everybody my spouse is having an affair.
Does the spouse that initiates that, do they ever come to the point and say, you know, I realized I made a mistake and I need to come clean with my spouse and say, here's what I've been doing. And I mean, that yeah. feels like a different way of doing it than maybe the wife or something, the husband's run off.
We say there are reasons, but no excuses for an affair. And the idea is to identify saying, you know, I maybe was disrespectful. Maybe I was controlling. Maybe I wasn't meeting your needs, but we can work this through. You don't have to go find somebody else. So we say at the onset, if there are reasons in your marriage that you're thinking, do I want to stick around for any reason, work on them. Have an open and honest conversation. Don't go be looking at somebody else.
And I assume that maybe the length of an affair, is that a factor in how long it takes to break it up?
I mean, the longer an affair goes on, you have two things working for you in length. One is that affairs almost always die a natural death. Okay, so 95% of all affairs end badly. And so if an affair dies a natural death, of course, you have an easier time reconciling because you no longer have the feeling of love anymore for this other person. So there's a sense in which if you let an affair go long enough, in most cases, it'll die. But you have to understand that only happens under the conditions of exposure. So we usually say, from the time it's exposed, count 2 years. If the affair is not over within 2 years, it's going to be one of those 5% that survive the whole situation.
But, and then of those who do get married to their affair partner, we call them affairages. Right?
That, right.
I got that right. Yeah.
And only 30% of those survive.
They don't do
so,
very
I mean, it's
well.
A very small – but the thing that's sort of interesting about the whole idea of exposure is that if you don't expose, the thing can go on forever. Basically, affairs thrive in secrecy. They thrive – so the more secret they are, the harder they are to break up. And so one of the things that we have always told people is that even though you want to protect – your dignity, even though you're embarrassed that your spouse had an affair and to tell other people that this is going on in your life, that you have this weakness, it's something we wanted to avoid. It's the smartest thing you can do if you're in that situation.
And especially in the Christian community. You want the support. You want people to be praying that your marriage will come back together. And so telling others is extremely important.
Talking today to Dr. Bill and Joyce Harley, talking about surviving an affair. We've been talking about why they begin and how to end them. And coming up here in the second part of the program, we want to talk about restoring the marriage and some of those steps and strategies to deal with issues of management, managing resentment and rebuilding trust. And we'll jump into more about the Love Bank and Love Busters and all those things. Love to have you join the conversation. We do have some copies of Bill and Joyce's books that we can give away. And if you'd like to sign up for one of those, you call us at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. And if you'd love to share a little bit about your story, your journey, we appreciate that opportunity to interact with you as well. And you can be anonymous if you prefer. It's 877-93-FAITH. More with the Harleys in just a moment here on Connecting Faith.
It flies in the face of all your pride, moves away the mad inside. It's always anger's own worst enemy. Even when the jury and the judge say you got a right to hold a grudge, in your ear saying set it free, forgiveness.
32 past the hour, and talking today about surviving an affair. It's a revised edition from Dr. Willard F. Harley and his daughter, Dr. Jennifer Harley Chalmers, have co-written that. Bill and Joyce have written a devotional together as well called Draw Close. We've got some copies of that we'll give away today. Bill's also written His Needs, Her Needs, Five Steps to Romantic Love, Love Busters, He Wins, She Wins, I think was the book we talked about the last time they were on. And we're grateful to have him back in studio again as we talk a little bit about this important issue. And we've spent some time, about sort of the whys and the hows. Let's talk about the restoring part, because it seems like, it's one thing to expose, but it's a whole nother journey to try and rebuild trust. What would you say to someone who is at that point? Say, all right, how do we start over now?
Yeah, the trust part is actually the last step. When you're all done and your marriage has been restored and you're in love again, the trust returns. But don't expect the trust to start at the beginning. And people will often say, you know, I want you to trust me that I'm never going to do this again. And you simply can't do that, and you shouldn't do it. So we talk about extraordinary precautions and accountability. So if a person's had an affair, the betrayed spouse has the right to verify whether or not the person has ended all contact with the person that they had the affair with. Now, what we recommend is that there never be another contact, any way, shape, or form. So that means that if you're working with this person, you got to find another job. If the person's your neighbor, you got to move. If a person is in your church, you got to go to another church. Many of the people that we have counseled after an affair have moved to another city.
We've even had relatives. My husband had an affair with my sister. And that means quite hurtfully we say this. Family gatherings, they can't go if that sister is going to be there. That's how extreme this has to be.
And the reason we do that is there are two reasons. Number one is that affairs can be rekindled. And so the contact that you would have with the person, even casual contact, would bring back all the feelings that you would have had before, and then it's all off and running again. But it's also a terrible offense to the betrayed spouse for that person to have any contact. See, so for the support of the betrayed spouse and to avoid the risk of rekindling the affair, we recommend absolutely no contact. Then we also recommend transparency. So from that point on, you tell each other everything. Talk about the policy of radical honesty. Never leave anything out. And the policy of joint agreement. Don't do anything without agreeing ahead of time. Now, that transparency and working together creates a bonding between the two of you now where someone from the outside can't get in. And you can't have this experience over again. And then the third thing is the restoration of a romantic relationship yourself. So all the things that you were doing in this affair, you need to be doing in your marriage and make sure that you love each other the way you love this person that you were having the affair with.
When we talk extraordinary precautions, we just recommend that for all marriages, quite honestly. The friendship idea, accountability. Bill and I talk to each other throughout the day. Well, I'm leaving Macy's now and I'm going to go over to Walmart. You know, it's not because he suspects me of anything. We want to be a part of each other's lives. But it is part of that as well. We know we feel free. We're open and honest. We are accountable with each other every minute of the day. We want it that way. But also, it's a good extraordinary precaution as well.
I would assume, though, when in a situation of affair particularly, that this policy of radical honesty, that there's going to be the tendency to be radically angry, isn't there? I mean, that so you're going to be honestly angry and really express that. So are there guidelines in that?
Yeah, anger. The policy of radical honesty actually doesn't mean that you say everything you think. Okay? So if you're thinking disrespectful thoughts, or if you're thinking things that you want to hurt the other guy for something that they've done, those things should not be expressed. So when I talk about radical honesty, I talk about the fact that Joyce needs to know what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, but if I feel judgmental toward her, then I keep that to myself. I would say that I'm unhappy about what you did here or there, but I won't start judging her for it and call that honesty. So the trick is to be able to let Joyce know where I am, let her know what I'm planning, that we make our decisions together. But if I start feeling like she needs to shape up. She needs to do better. She needs to be a better person. As a spouse, I'm in no position to do that with her. We are to support each other. If I need help in an area, a personal area of my life, I have to go find somebody to help me with that, that is a professional in that area. But my wife is not assigned to that job.
We talked about these extraordinary precautions about the importance of transparency. There's another part we should just touch on, too. You mentioned it in passing. I know we discussed it, I think, more in depth last time, but the policy of joint agreement and the sort of art of negotiation. What do we mean by a joint agreement?
Yeah, policy joint agreement, never do anything without an enthusiastic agreement between you and your spouse. And if you think about that for a minute, that sounds very controlling. You know, never do anything without enthusiasm. Do you mean to say that I can't take a shower in the morning unless I get Joyce's approval? Well, there are a host of things that Joyce and I have already agreed to. We never have to go to each other to check on this or that or the other thing. We already know what the other person's going to do. But on lifestyle choices, where we're going to have to live with this sort of thing, Joyce and I need to talk it over, and we need to work something out that would work for both of us. So an enthusiastic agreement means that we're figuring out a way of resolving this conflict that we have in a way that works well for both of us. Now, think about it for just a minute in terms of selfishness, okay? If I'm a very selfish person, I wouldn't like the policy of joint agreement because I would want to do something that Joyce might not appreciate. So what the policy of joint agreement does is it actually addresses my selfishness. But it also addresses Joyce's selfishness because I have to be enthusiastic about what she wants to do too. So she can't give me a long list of stuff that I have to do over the weekend because it has to be something I'd be enthusiastic about doing. So what it does is eliminate selfishness from both of us simultaneously. It's a great little rule. Never do anything without an enthusiastic agreement between you and your spouse because it forces you to work things out together before you go off and do things that would turn out to be selfish.
It's important to understand why this is important. Resentment and other things can happen if you don't go along with this, right?
Right. If I do something that you would not appreciate and you tell me, you know, no, I wouldn't like that, and I say, well, Joyce, you're just going to have to live with it. The problem with that is she's going to remember that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. This is going to be a constant problem. It's what I call type A resentment. When the other guy does something that violates the policy of joint agreement, you get type A resentment, lasts the rest of your life. Type B resentment is a resentment that I might feel not being able to do what I want to do today. But that resentment goes away as soon as Joyce and I come up with some alternative. Well, how about this, Joyce? Yeah, that worked for me. My resentment, type B resentment, is gone.
What's good about it, too, Neil, is that when things don't work out with something the two of you have decided on together, you have nobody to blame with each other. It's not like, you made me do this. You said, no, we both decided. And so we're both going to go through the difficulty of whatever comes up because of our decision together.
No zero-sum game kind of thing.
There you go.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about policy of joint agreement is that you come up with creative solutions. You don't do what Joyce wanted to do. You don't do what Bill wanted to do. You come up with some third alternative that neither Bill or Joyce even thought about doing until they really put their heads together and thought about these other alternatives.
And what we're doing here is we're building romantic love, right? And we should maybe just before we get to our call, should say a word about the love bank because that's really what the basis for all this is.
Well, we talked earlier about the romantic love, and the question is how do we get romantic love? And in my theory of romantic love is that we associate people with good feelings and bad feelings. And if we associate a person with enough good feelings, I call it making deposits in the love bank. And you breach the romantic love threshold, and suddenly your mind changes, your brain changes, your emotions start giving you the message, hey, we want this person to stay around. We really like having this person with us because this person makes us feel so good. And so it puts us into overdrive. And we now begin thinking now about this other person being a part of our life much more than we would have otherwise. That's the feeling of romantic love, and it gets there by making massive love bank deposits.
Many authorities will say, you know, first 5 years, it'll be gone. But we're saying you can have it for a lifetime.
Yeah. And obviously, withdrawals can happen as easily as deposits, and we'll maybe touch more on that in a moment. Let's go to line one. Cheryl is calling, listening in. Cheryl, tell us a little bit about your story. You've got some encouragement, right?
Yes, definitely. My husband and I, we were married for 5 years and divorced for 2.5 years. And the first 5 years we were married, neither one of us knew the Lord in a personal way. And I had two affairs with two different men within that period. And the first one I just ended as far as not making contact anymore. And you are so right. People don't plan affairs. They just happen in workplaces or of starting from a friendship. And my husband and I were kind of drifting apart because we were saving for a house. And so I was working two jobs and he was working two jobs. And so we drifted apart. And but I guess the hope I want to bring is prayer is so huge. My husband was all involved in a fellowship group. He made a commitment to the Lord the first year we were divorced. And the second year we were divorced, I made a personal commitment to the Lord. He was involved in a fellowship group praying that we would be brought back together. Even though I was not in the affair at the time, I still was very hard-hearted and had no intention of going back to him. I had no feelings towards him. I did not want to be with him. And God softened my heart. And to me, which was as big of a miracle as somebody getting out of a wheelchair, because I know how hard I was and did not want to get back together with him. We were remarried on Friday, July 13th, just kind of as a kick in the pants to the enemy. People said, "You're crazy. You've been divorced for 2.5 years. It will never work." And I says, "You know, when you have the Lord in the middle of your marriage, yes, it can and will work." And that was back in 1979. We've been together ever since. We've had times on a scale of 1 to 10. 10, our marriage being awesome. 1, not being good at all. We had adopted two boys, went through some trying times. At that point, our marriage was probably at a -8 or a -9, so it was not good. But we stayed together, and the Lord has just healed, and we still have up and downs like any marriage. Really? But God has just put our marriage back together, and he's the only one we can give credit to because he's the one that did it.
Cheryl, thanks for that, your story and your encouragement that, you know, prayer and your support group at church really didn't make a difference.
Yeah, it did. And
we know a couple in Wisconsin. The same thing happened.
Same story.
They divorced, mm-hmm. and now they're remarried, and they're leading His Needs, Her Needs workshops in the Eau Claire area.
Mm-hmm. Making a difference. So thank you for that call. We'll get to another question coming up in just a moment. We'll take a quick break, though, and return as we talk about relationships, surviving an affair. Not only are you talking about you know, how to end it, but then how to restore the marriage and getting some practical biblical wise insight today from Dr. Willard F. Harley, nationally acclaimed clinical psychologist, marriage counselor, and best-selling author. Books including His Needs, Her Needs, Five Steps to Romantic Love, Love Busters, He Wins, She Wins, the book we're referencing today, Surviving an Affair. We got some copies of the resources that we'll give away if you'd like to be in the drawing for that. Bill and Joyce have written a devotional book together as well called Draw Close, and we'll make those available too if you'd like to sign up for that. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484.
But I know we're gonna make it. I know we're gonna get there soon. And I know sometimes it feels like we're going the wrong way. It's just a long way home.
48 past the hour, talking today with Dr. Bill Harley and wife Joyce. They've got 50-plus years married together. They do a daily radio show called Marriage Builders Radio on their website at marriagebuilders.com, right? You can find it there, marriagebuilders.com.
Right? That's right.
You got an app, too, right? A phone app?
Yeah, so. Go to the home page, and all the instructions are there to download the app for any smartphone ever made.
I know, which is why you're looking at me like, you know, when are you getting
a
smartphone, Neil?
Come on, Neil.
We're going to put it on your smartphone. You said, "I don't have a smartphone."
It'll make you smart.
Yeah, well, that's I can use some help there. So we're going to take a question from a caller here in a moment, but I just, and maybe I'll ask this question too, it sets it up. One of the things you talk about is is in dealing with sort of the policy of joint agreement and radical honesty, is talk about independent behavior. And I'm wondering, is there any room for independent behavior after an affair?
See, the problem with independent behavior is that it's selfish behavior. Now, I define it very carefully. Independent behavior is not simply going to the grocery store and seeing something you want and going ahead and buying it. It's more of a behaving as if you're not married, behaving as if the other guy doesn't exist. So you're not even interested in knowing whether the other person would or would not appreciate what you're doing. Interdependent behavior is the alternative, which means that I care about how Joyce reacts to the decisions that I make. And so I go to her and say, how do you feel about something I'm planning? And then she says, well, that wouldn't work for me. So then I rethink it to work something out so that it can work for both of us. Independent behavior, again, I go back to what I said a little while ago, is a selfish way to behave. It's an uncaring way to behave. And a person that is married to an independent person feels uncared for. And so my position is that independent behavior does not belong in marriages. It should not happen. If one spouse says, you know, just because I'm married doesn't mean I can't make my own decisions, you got a different definition of marriage than I do. I did something the other day that was very interesting. I observed focus groups of millennials who were talking about marriage. And what was incredibly interesting to me was the fact that they couldn't define marriage. They didn't know what marriage was. Now, for the listeners, I want to make it real clear. Marriage is a relationship of extraordinary care. It's a relationship of extraordinary care. I provide Joyce with care for her for the rest of her life. She does the same for me. That's what marriage is, okay? And independent behavior is the opposite of that. Independent behavior is extraordinarily not caring and doing what I please without considering how it's going to affect Joyce. So if we're married, we have to care for each other in an extraordinary way, or we're not dealing with what God intended marriage to be in the first place.
Let's take this anonymous caller asked this question. Suspicious of his wife's behavior on her cell phone. She's always being protective and even bringing it to the bathroom with her. He says, how do I find out if she's having an affair that I fear she's having? What are the signs?
Well, it's clearly an example of independent behavior. Mm-hmm. Basically, a person might have cell phone conversations that are not any way, shape, or form an affair. It might be a same-sex friend that she knew in high school, and they're just getting together, but she just doesn't think her husband needs to know about it.
Well, it could be, too, that she might think he'll criticize her, make fun of her in the conversation, mm-hmm. so she's going to keep it private. So that's one possibility.
Or that just because I'm married doesn't mean my husband needs to know everything about me.
That, too.
See, that can be the thing, too. But it is very likely, it's very likely that it's an affair. Very likely. You should have the password for your spouse's smartphones, your spouse's computers, your spouse's Facebook account. You should be able to get into everything your spouse is into. And if you can't, it becomes a breeding ground for infidelity. And so I would say to this listener, your spouse is probably having an affair. But don't expose an affair that you don't have enough information about that you could convince a jury. This is what I always say. We talked earlier about exposure. Don't be telling your friends your spouse is having an affair unless you have certain evidence. And the evidence that we commonly get nowadays is email. Email. They write to each other in email that exposes their affair. And text messages that can be recovered. And so one of the things about an affair is that people that are having affairs are generally sloppy. They make a lot of mistakes. And so I would encourage him to look further, to investigate. Don't accuse her of having an affair, but check up on everything that she's doing. And in our year of technology here, we have an amazing capacity to learn about anybody. I can learn about what you do, Neil, by just going to the
we don't have to say how you can
do
that.
No, that's right.
I know about you, Neil.
Yeah, so I can't find out about my smartphone. I don't have one of those, but if I did, I would know.
But I like what you said, don't accuse. Yeah. Don't accuse yet. I mean, you can have suspicions, but just get your evidence gathered together before you even discuss it.
I just Google Neil Stavem.
Sure, that's right.
You're still on that. Okay, moving right along.
All right, so Sue has a question. She says, my husband seems to have a flirty nature. He's calm. I think he's calmed down a bit, especially around me, but not responsive in our marriage. It still affects us. I'm a little concerned about, you know, and he's flirty.
Dangerous. It's very dangerous. And a lot of people flirt not to have an affair, but just because they think it's fun.
And we hear a lot from the spouses. Mm-hmm. They don't like it.
It's offensive to the spouse, but it's also risky because it's like planting seeds. And once in a while, the seed grows up, and now you're in a full-blown affair, and it started as flirting. And you flirt, and the other person flirts back. What are you really doing? You're making love bank deposits, and you're not guarding your love bank from outside threats. So I would say anybody that tends to be a flirt, stop it.
Yeah, back off. Because what does she do? What does she say to her husband to express how it bothers her, and she's concerned that it could be taken seriously down the road?
It goes back to independent behavior again. See, if you say to your husband, "It really bothers me when you flirt," well, you know, it's not. I'm not flirting.
It's just who I am.
Yeah, it's what I do. It's what I do. It's selfish behavior because if it bothers,
but you can't call him selfish though.
No, if it bothers, and this is one of the reasons that I like to set up a rule. The rule is never do anything without an enthusiastic agreement between you and your spouse, policy of joint agreement. As soon as you agree to that rule, it rules out flirting.
See, what I'd like to hear from him after she expresses, it bothers me when you do this. Okay, tell me when I do it, because I don't even know what I'm doing it, perhaps. And a lot of flirts don't. And then he comes back and he says, really? That's flirting to you? Okay, I got to curb that.
Yep.
You know, the cooperation would be really encouraging.
We only got about 90 seconds left. So it's probably not enough time, but, you know, there are two sides to every story. So is there anything you recommend for friends or family that maybe have been involved in an affair?
Yeah, if you know that someone is having an affair, if you know the question is, what should I do about it? If it's a friend of yours that's having an affair, should you tell the partner that I know that this person is having an affair? My answer is yes. Yes, you should reveal it. The question is, would you like to know from your friend? If you have a friend that knows that your spouse is having an affair, would you want that friend to tell you? Absolutely. And so basically we say, if you know that an affair is going on, reveal it to the other spouse. Yeah, but then the person I'm talking about isn't ever going to want to be with me again, maybe for a while. But down the road, they're going to thank you that you did what you did.
We're talking about surviving an affair. It's advice and insight, not only how to end it, but how to restore the marriage. It's a great resource from Dr. Willard Harley joining us today. Surviving an Affair. He's also written His Needs, Her Needs, Five Steps to Romantic Love, Love Busters, He Wins, She Wins. Bill and Joyce have written Draw Close as well, and we'll do a drawing for some copies of that as well at the end of the show. MarriageBuilders.com's website, right?
MarriageBuilders.com has just about anything you'd ever want to know about marriage. We have articles. We have Q&A columns. We have a forum. Somebody will answer you almost immediately on the forum if you have a question. Great resource, and it's almost all free.
Good.
No membership required.
Good. MarriageBuilders.com. Check it out. Joyce, Bill, good to see you guys again.
Always good to see you, Neil.
Thank you. And I'll, you know, if you want to know anything about what I'm doing, you just, you know,
just Google
me.
I'll just call you. Sherry.
Sure. You get a better chance of getting an answer there calling Sherry. All right. If you missed part of today's show or maybe want to pass it on to a friend, we hope that you do. You know, all our interviews are shareable. We post them online after the show. So go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page for the podcast archives. And thanks for listening.